the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
What we see happening in Iran today.
President Obama has failed to lead in the face.
Well, there are some days I try to figure it out because I'm always.
Doreen Branson is live at the Staples Center.
It sounds racist to me.
Yeah,
Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. Dogs at the Westminster Kennel Club. You ever watch this thing?
Yeah, I've seen it sometime.
This is every year, man. They have this dog show. And they have two, let's see, where can you find nearly 2,000 dogs and a lot more doggy crap in one building this week? Well, it's at Madison Square Garden, the Westminster Dog, the Kennel Club show.
Yeah, that's the one where they run around with them.
Yeah, they run around with them, man. And they have them, you know, they look at their teeth and all that. I've never, I like dogs just as much as the next guy. I've never really got the whole dog show thing. I couldn't tell you what they're looking for.
Well, I think they're looking for, like, what's a dog good for, you know?
Well, what's a poodle good for?
What is a poodle good for?
A poodle, like, I think that's a hunting dog.
A hunting dog? Are you kidding me? What, the poodle gonna hunt what? He's gonna hunt, like, somebody's mink coat or something? Where's my mink coat, Snookums? And that dog's all, you know, I can't feature that.
I don't know what kind of, a lot of dogs are raised for specific, they were raised for specific reasons, and then human beings, what do you think of that dog whisperer?
I like the dog whisperer.
I don't think he knows what he's talking about.
You know, we talked about the dog whisperer one time on a show, and people were really resentful of him.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, they were all, boy, don't tell me how to run my dog. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, a lot of people think they know about dogs, but they don't.
Oh, I think most people don't know their ass from a hole in the ground about a dog or how to take care of animals. Nothing. And, you know, I walk and run here at the El Pacifico, and I will go down into the beach area, you know, where the houses are, and I will run down along the jetty, and I come back. You guys know where I go, right?
Yeah.
And I see tons of dogs, and I see tons of people with their dogs. And 90% of them, well, not 90, I'd say a good 50% of them have got the jaws on the dog, you know, tied shut with a leash, or they got one of those little cages.
Yeah, in case they bite.
Yeah. Now, what is that about? What's that about?
Well, I mean, some dog's going to bite if you reach down and touch them.
No, a dog's going to bite if you walk past a damn thing. Now, I believe, and I've always had this philosophy, and I don't care what anybody thinks, dogs don't bite human beings. When a dog bites a human being, you should kick the thing until it's dead.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. I'm being literal.
Yeah, man, you're going to get a real pissed off owner.
Whoa, now I know that. There's some people that value the lives of dogs before they value the lives of human beings. And they tell you that because that's how sick they are. That's how I think humans that treat animals better than other humans. I think people that value dogs or cats or animals above humans, I think they are mentally disturbed. Okay? Like that bitch with that chimp in Connecticut.
Yeah, well, she was crazy. Everybody knows she was crazy. You know.
Well, you say everybody knows she's crazy. She's not much different than a lot of people with their dogs. Just so happens a chimp is deadly, man. A dog is going to bite you. You know. Did I ever tell the story of that guy I know at the beach, Mark, what he did with that pit bull?
Yeah, you said he swung it around and he threw it against the wall.
He did. This pit bull went after somebody's dog. He grabbed the hind legs of this pit bull, and he swung it around like you would swing around a child. When you know how you kind of turn around, swing around with a little girl or a little boy, you're holding onto their hands?
Yeah.
Only he had the pit bull like that by the hind legs. And he swung around like you're like the hammer throw in the Olympics and threw this damn thing against the wall of a house.
Oh, man. What happened?
That dog was like, what the hell happened to me? That dog was, you know, and some people may think I'm being cruel, but let me tell you, this animal, this dog was about to tear ass after a woman and a small dog. In fact, it was going after the little dog. It was a pit bull off the leash, had gotten out of somebody's yard, and that's life, you know? I love animals, man. I've been known to drive around the neighborhood with dogs and cats in my car looking for their owners when they're abandoned or whether they're walking down the street. I've been known to do all that kind of stuff. I took a cat to the animal hospital one day. It wasn't even my cat. I just found a cat laying behind my house, sick. I mean, deathly sick. And I just found this animal, picked it up, and took it down to the animal hospital. So I love cats and dogs. I love all kinds of animals. But they are not of greater value than a human being. It's never going to happen in my world. And when I see somebody with a dog or any other kind of animal that's dangerous, and they're out in public with the damn thing, and I really resent these stupid bastards with their pit bulls standing around like they're some kind of badass with their dog. You know what, man? All I got to do is come back with a baseball bat. That's the end of your dog. Oh, well, I guess he's going to get pissed, you know.
Yeah, that's what those guys will do.
Well, let him get pissed then. Dogs do not bite human beings. I don't give a damn. Unless it is in defending the life of the human being. It's a life and death situation. I understand that. I understand a guard dog doing that. You don't bite a human being simply for walking by. You don't bite a human being for reaching down and petting. If your animal reacts like that, take your dog and stick it back in the yard and teach it some manners before you walk it out in the street where human beings live. And I mean, the mental disease of some people with their pets, to the point where human beings are getting mutilated, killed, crippled. You got to be kidding me.
You ever seen that show on TV called Fatal Attraction?
There's a movie.
No. He's talking about the TV show on Animal Planet?
Yeah.
I've seen it advertised.
That show, man, is scary. Because that show, people and their animals, and then what happened, you know?
What like when they get too close to them?
Yeah. They had one lady had a crocodile, man. She got like bit her hand off. They had that chimp lady story. They had another story about a guy that had a cat.
You mean like a tiger?
Yeah, like a tiger.
What'd it do?
Oh, it killed him. It killed him, man. With one swipe of his paw, killed a guy. And that guy knew that tiger ever since it was a kitten.
A kitten? What do they call tigers?
Like a kitten.
A kitten? No, they don't. They call them cubs, don't they?
Yeah, I think they call them cubs.
Sure, I believe it. I believe it. There are domesticated animals. There are wild animals. There are wild animals that are tamed. So there's three basic kinds of animals. Domesticated means that they have been a part, basically, of the human family for thousands of years. They have been domesticated. They are scientists now tell us that dogs and cats recognize the human form from birth. So when a cat looks up and it's born, or a dog looks up and it's born, or other domesticated animals, I forget which ones are chickens, I think, are domesticated, others. But they know this about dogs and cats. When they look up at a human, from birth, they recognize the human form. So that's how familiar they are with us. It's in their DNA. It's in their genes. Wild animals are wild animals. And they may look cute, and they may look furry, and they may look like the greatest things in sliced bread. But like raccoons, you know?
Yeah, like the raccoon you're telling me you're going to feed.
I'm not feeding any raccoons. I had raccoons at my house one time, and they were very rude, and they left without saying thank you. No, I'm kidding.
What?
No, I'm kidding. There were raccoons out in my backyard, and they were up on their little hind legs all begging, because people feed these guys, you know?
What'd you do?
I told them to get the hell out, man. I said, get out. I said, clear out now. I want to see you guys break camp by sunup. No, I went, boo, and, you know, they ran.
Is that the one that fell in your pool?
Yeah, there was one that fell in my pool. There were three raccoons, and I just opened the door, and I went, get out of here, you know, like that. And two of them went right and left. The other one went straight back into my pool. I heard this, right? Then I kept looking into the dark, and I saw these two little eyes suddenly light up staring at me like, you scared me.
That's funny as hell, man. The one that went in the pool?
I guess it's the one that went in the pool, yeah. So we had tons of raccoons, man. Where I used to live, we had raccoons, we had rabbits, we had snakes, we had coyote. We had the damn coyote were everywhere. I mean, everywhere. And, in fact, I befriended a cat from the neighborhood. It was an outdoor cat. It wasn't an indoor cat. It's an outdoor cat. But I used to feed him, and Catherine fed him, and she was destroyed because one night I knew it happened. I heard just like that, and I look out, and there's this big-ass coyote eating out of the cat's dish. So,
uh-oh.
Yep. He got a hold of the cat, man. Must have been a nice snack. And I just, and that, of course, coyotes are the same way. All you got to do is go boo. And they, man, they are, you don't even see, it's like Coyote and the Roadrunner in the cartoon. All you see is that little puff of dust, you know, and they're gone. So there's wild, and then there's wild tame animals. And those are like the pandas and the, yeah, all these creatures. And they're dangerous too, man. And all we have to say is Siegfried and Roy. And what do you think of?
Two gay guys.
Not two gay guys. I'm talking about what happened to that one guy.
Oh, yeah. He got bit.
Got bit is right. And the tiger didn't even mean anything by it. The tiger was trying to, I don't know, what was he doing, saving him?
Yeah, he's trying to get him back to his cage on account he thought that lady was going to hurt him.
See, that's nuts, man. So people and animals, I mean, we don't know a thing about them. We treat them ridiculously. We sleep with them. We make love to them. Jesus, some of these people with their pets makes me sick. I want to throw up. Honest to God, that woman with that chimp, they should have shot her, too. I'm sorry to say that.
Oh, watch it, man. Come on.
I'm telling you, it pissed me off so much. The cops should have gone back and shot her. Not literally, but I mean, that was how I felt at the time.
Yeah, she was like kissing it and everything.
Kissing it? I mean, she was nuts. They would have been doing the human race a favor, man, if they would have plugged that stupid chimp and then her, too. Oh, yeah, no, I don't play that at all. So dogs, cats, any of them that are not friendly to the human race, they have no value, no worth, no, unless they're a guard dog.
What about a guard cat?
What do you mean a guard cat?
Well, couldn't it make a cat whisper?
Yeah, a cat whisper? You saw what happened to Dean Wheeler when he tried to be one of those. He got his face clawed, man. No way. All right, coming back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry show, Japan has suspended a whale hunt after they got chased by protesters. And the Atlanta Thrashers, that'll be hockey team number two, Atlanta, that you're losing, as the Thrashers are thinking of going to Canada. Some sports talk coming up here on the world-famous Phil Hendry show.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And just a comment. Iran, as you know, or may not know, Iran, well, you do know that Iran has, from June of 2009, the people of Iran, a segment of the population of Iran, a significant segment, the electorate, a youthful electorate, and a progressive, and when I say progressive, I don't mean that in the political sense so much as I mean that in the sense of you know, history and society and governance. These folks are not happy with the Islamic State. There have now been recent clashes with the authorities in Iran as recently as this week, and watch as the progressives in this country, and by that I do mean political, the liberals in this country, watch as they all of a sudden disappear. Just disappear, man.
Yeah, they don't like that.
I don't know why it is, but you bring up Iran, and all of a sudden, these big fat mouths have been flapping about Egypt for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. All of a sudden, they're gone. Now, what's that about? And now we got, guess what else we got? Libya. Now the crap's hitting the fan in Libya. That's right. As recently as today, Libyan authorities now are busting out the tear gas and the this and the that, you know, in Libya. Remember we said last week about Syria?
You said they wouldn't do it in Syria because of the police state.
That's right. But the country of Syria and the Syrian political situation has been very much in the news because people are, in a way, wondering what's going to happen in that country. Now, Syria, in my opinion, and this is just my uninformed opinion, but I don't think Syria is going to stand for, in the words of the James Brown song, Papa don't stand no mess, you know.
Yeah, well, they got blowtorch toilets and stuff.
What?
They got toilets that are blowtorches.
Toilets that are blowtorches? What are you talking about?
Yeah, man. He's talking about the Shah of Iran had that.
The Shah had the Savak when they sat down on the toilet? Oh, yeah. That's. You imagine? What is the mind that came up with that?
Yeah, but Syria's got that, too.
How do you know? I don't want to talk about that. I don't even want to talk about that. You imagine what kind of a sadistic bastard came up with that? And don't you say CIA or I'll...
Well, I don't know, man. Maybe the British did.
More likely the British. More likely the Syrians. More likely the Russians. So, for the purposes of this discussion, and today I saw on Tweetster, our favorite cartoon-looking guy, Roger Ebert.
Yeah.
And he says the following thing, did it really take trillions of dollars and that many lives to do what Egypt did peacefully? That was his question. And, of course, he's referring to Iraq, and he's referring to Afghanistan. And what's really sad and completely dishonest is for a guy like Ebert, first of all, I'm not saying he shouldn't have his opinion, but for a guy like Ebert, who is a liberal, to refuse any linkage between what happened in Iraq by way of U.S. military force and events in Iran, Tunisia, Egypt, and elsewhere. To refuse to accept that what happened, and there are a great many journalists, many of them Arabic journalists, who have said the following in so many words. What America did was stir the pot in the Middle East. It was something that that was needed and had been needed for a long time. And I agree with that, and I adhere to that philosophy. What we did in Iraq by going in and with a mighty military force and taking out an entire regime, we did stir the pot in the Middle East and create in the minds of the people of the Middle East at least the idea that it was possible to free oneself from these despots who've been there for decades. Now we got Gaddafi. 41 years that guy has been in power. 41 years. You think Mubarak was there? 41 years this guy, Gaddafi. Sure, I know the United States is in bed with a guy. I mean, we talked him out of his terrorist ways, supposedly. And he gave up his his aspirations for this and that and something else. And he's no longer a terrorist. And that's wonderful. But guess what? You know, you're still a dictator. And so it may not be enough to say he's no longer a terrorist. The people of Libya may have something to say about that, and that's kind of the way that thing goes. And I would say, folks, especially conservatives, before you want to distance yourself from some of these things that are happening, understand that it was, in my opinion, and I think I'm right, George Bush, who was the man that introduced into the game, if you will, in the Middle East, the idea that these guys are not so entrenched that they can't be, that you can't cut the head off of these regimes. And I don't think it is, coincidental at all that all of a sudden we have Iran after so many years we're told, oh yeah, I mean, that's the Islamic Republic. You don't mess with that. And this is the way, and they're tribal people, and they're this, and they're that, and there's some other bullcrap. Oh, really? Well, guess what? And then here comes Egypt, here comes Tunisia, here comes Libya, here comes Yemen, here comes, here comes Papa. So I am going to be interested to watch the progressives and watch them squirm over Iran. I'm going to be interested, and I'll watch them squirm as they continue to deny linkage between Iraq and what's happening in the rest of the Middle East. As they continue to deny any linkage, as they continue to come up, as they will, with every phony excuse, every lie, everything they can think of to discredit what we did in Iraq and what is happening in the rest of the region. You can't deny the connection. You can try, but the more you do, the dumber you look. And people, you know, especially about as dumb as those people who said democracy is foreign to a tribal people. That's almost racist, if you think about it. And, in fact, it is, if you think about it. It is racist. It's basically saying, bunch of guys that lived as nomads on the sand on the backs of camels, what do they know about countries and national assemblies? All they know is how to find the next watering hole and do that whole Anthony Quinn, impersonation.
What are you talking about, Anthony Quinn? He's a Mexican.
Yes, he is a Mexican, but he played an Arab.
Oh.
Guys, you don't know anything, do you? 877-876-7445 here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, kicking things off this week. And our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Canada is calling as the Thrashers look for support in Atlanta, and they ain't getting it, man. I think it's about time. I kind of have gotten a renewed interest in hockey, and I don't know why. I think it's because it's a physical sport. It's a violent sport. There's no more football. I can't stand basketball. Ain't much on baseball. And what the hell, man? I think I'm into hockey now.
Really?
Yeah. I go through YouTube looking for all those fight videos. We'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Famous Phil Henry Show.
You know, these Iranians, not to get too crazy.
Man, you know, they're never going to go to war.
I don't care, man. All I'm telling you is if Iran keeps doing what they're doing, which is basically telling everybody to shove it sideways, so what's the end game there, man? What are you supposed to do?
Well, they're not. What are you talking about? Like, we're going to attack and everything?
Well, what are you supposed to do? I mean, tell me, somebody, you know, I'm listening to all these guys criticizing. What are you supposed to do? If these guys in Iran are doing whatever they're not supposed to be doing, look, I don't care. I mean, I didn't make the rules, but the rules are the rules, the laws are the law. And if the guy says, which it does say, the UN says, you can't have nuclear weapons, you can have nuclear energy so as to enrich your... And don't give me this crap about Israel, because they didn't sign that damn thing, which is the non-proliferation treaty, or whatever, however you pronounce it. But the point is, aren't you supposed to invade?
Yeah, man, but you can't. You're going to have Obama invade?
Obama would never invade. Obama doesn't have the political will to invade Iran, even though it would be completely justified if Iran continues to say, stick it sideways, no, we won't let you inspect, and your sanctions are pointless. They're doing exactly what freaking Saddam did. So if they don't want to do anything with Saddam, if that was a bad thing to do, and they should have had more inspections, and they should have done this, and they should have done that, all right, what do you do when all that stuff runs out? You know?
You're going to belch.
Yeah, I was going to belch. You don't have to point it out, man. All right, so I just thought I'd bring that up, because that's the little entree into Canada. Wants the Thrashers to move there.
How do you get into hockey, man?
I'm into hockey now. I'm into hockey big time. I love it, and that's where it's at. There's no more football. I can't watch basketball. The playoffs are fine. If the Lakers are in, that's good. Other than that, I don't care. Oh, man, I don't care. And baseball, get out of here with that. Football and now hockey. So I'm watching a little bit of it. And to sort of whet my appetite, I went to YouTube and I looked up some of the great fights.
Very good fights.
Well, there was one good fight. One of the best I saw was 1979, New York Rangers and Boston Bruins. And the Bruins won the game. And then a fan at Madison Square Garden grabbed a stick from one of the Bruins, and all of the Bruin players went up into the stands.
What, they're going up there what?
To start beating, kicking ass.
You're kidding.
No. And one of the Bruins, Terry O'Reilly, he went up, man, he starts wailing, another guy goes up. Every guy on the Bruin team was in the stands at Madison Square Garden. That's fantastic. And then remember the other day we were talking about Dave Tiger Williams?
Yeah.
Look up Dave Tiger Williams on YouTube and look up his fights. Every one of his fights, it looks like he lost, too. I mean, if you look at his face, you can tell he lost all his fights. But still, all these fights. And there was one he had with this guy, Terry O'Reilly. Then the fight of fights. This is an amazing fight. And for those of you, again, who are not hockey fans, hockey is its own little world, and it has its own little fiefdom. And all of the little disputes and the fights and the bad blood that goes on in hockey, it runs deep and it runs long. Teams hate each other for decades. Players hate each other for years and years and years. And they fight it out, and they spill blood. And so what happened was, in 1996, there was a Detroit Red Wing player Chris Draper, who was injured very, very badly by this big lummox of a guy named Claude Lemieux, who played for Colorado. The Colorado and Detroit has had a blood feud ever since. Now, the following year, in one of the regular season games, a brawl broke out between the Colorado Avalanche and the Detroit Red Wings. Away from the fight was Claude Lemieux, the guy that had injured this Red Wing terribly the year before. And a guy by the name of Darren, what's his name? I can't remember the last name. Colcox, this guy, just comes up, and I mean, he just knocked Claude Lemieux out. Blood all over the ice, blood all over his face. And thus continues this dispute. And then later in the season, these two guys are facing off, and they look at each other. You see them talking to each other. The game hasn't even started yet.
Oh, I saw that when you were showing that.
Yeah, the game hasn't even started, and they're looking at each other, talking, looking, stalking. And suddenly they drop the sticks, and they go at it. So a lot of people say, well, what is the point of that in hockey? It seems to be, and it is a part of the game. It is as legitimate a part of the offense and defense as any other play might be in football, baseball, basketball, hockey. It is a part of the game, fighting. You get penalties, but you don't get penalties. They're not the kind of penalties that would get you thrown from the game unless it's really egregious. Two guys squaring off and duking it out, generally, they don't break it up until you fall to the ice. If you're still on your feet, they don't go near you. The referees will not go near two players that are still fighting on their feet. The minute they go to the ice, then they break them up. The penalties that they get, maybe 4 minutes for roughing. You never hear them getting these penalties for fighting. You generally get them while he was roughing. Roughing? That guy that knocked out Claude Lemieux, he came up, and I mean a right hand, boom! I mean, he hit him so hard, he dropped to the ice like a bag of potatoes, and then turtled, what they call turtled.
What's that? That's what he gets, you know, like covers his head.
Yeah, he got into a little, he covered his head up. And, of course, it was very humiliating to him. So that's why when they came out and they played the next time, Lemieux and this guy start duking it out. Now, do I like that? If it's part of the game, I do. You know, and there, to an extent, it is. But I think that's what people misunderstand about hockey. To a certain extent, it is very much a part of the game. You hire, not as much anymore as they used to, but you hire what they call goons or enforcers, guys that'll go around and dish out the pain if one of your star players is hurt or they act as bodyguards and so on. These days, these so-called goons and enforcers have got to be able to skate and score. So let's take a look at this story here. The Canadians scan the attendance figures for the NHL. They grab a hold of the numbers next to the Atlanta Thrashers and adopt a view of hockey in the Sun Belt. They envision Phillips Arena as a destination for tourists, not serious hockey folks. The Canadians are waiting for the tourists to become so irritated they abandon the Thrashers completely and become content with football. The Atlanta Thrashers are in the midst of a reboot with a new coach, a respected teacher and tactician, a new general manager who acquired five players from a Stanley Cup team, and a new star who signed a five-year deal. As the Thrashers try to earn their second playoff berth, the noise around whether the team is viable in Atlanta long-term grows. Busloads of Quebec City fans clamoring for a team travel 535 miles to Nassau Coliseum on Long Island to see the New York Islanders play. Thrasher president Don Waddell said a Quebec City newspaper sent reporters to inquire about the demise of hockey in Atlanta and whether the team might be relocated to Quebec City. So what all of that means is for the second time, Atlanta had a hockey team. And they're about to lose it.
What was the first one?
They had one called the Flames, the Atlanta Flames. And they left. And I never could figure out whether hockey was going to be a thing in the South or not. I think it's a minor league sport in the South, but it ain't a big league sport. Unless you're talking about Tampa Bay, you know.
Well, yeah, but Tampa Bay, man, you call that the South?
Yeah, I call Tampa the South, yeah. I mean, I may not call Miami the South. Tampa's the South. Don't worry about it. But here's the thing. When I was living in Atlanta, I went to hockey in Atlanta. They had minor league hockey at that time.
When was that?
That was like 1992. And I had a friend of mine. I was working at a radio station in Atlanta. And working at the station, he had tickets to see the Atlanta Knights. That was the name of the team. And they had billboards that said, come see the Atlanta Knights down here at the Omni, which is where the Hawks would play. I don't know what arena they got in Atlanta now, but they had the Omni, which was right next to the Georgia Dome. So I take the train down there, And we'd go in and we'd watch the Atlanta Knights play hockey. Well, the funniest thing, and I don't think I'm, you know, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I'm telling you, it was freaking rednecks everywhere. You know?
A lot of chicks with big hair and everything.
Oh, big hair? You wouldn't believe it, man. Big ass hair piled up, you know, and all these redneck boyfriends are there, and they're loving it. I mean, they're loving it. They're pounding on the glass. They dig it. So, you know, I think it's a sport, regardless of whether they're playing it on ice or a bunch of Canadians are playing it. I don't know, but people like it because it's a physical game, because there's just good all out, you know, just brawling goes on. And I don't know. I maybe I'm at a point in my life where I can really, really appreciate that stuff. All right. In other news here on the Phil Henry Show, losing your hair at 20. Oh, I better not say this one, bud.
What?
Well, you're losing your hair only because you ran your head through a tree. Losing your hair at 20 is linked to prostate cancer.
Well, who loses their hair at 20 other than Bud?
A guy that's going to have prostate cancer, I guess. I mean, I shouldn't make a joke out of it, but there's a French study, so you can qualify with that. I'm kidding. The French, they're very good doctors. A French study has found that men who start to lose their hair at the age of 20 are more likely to develop prostate cancer in later life. Oh, boy. The research compared 388 men being treated for prostate cancer with a control group of 281 healthy men and found that those with the disease were twice as likely as the healthy men to have started going bald when they were 20. Ah, baloney.
Well, you can't blow that off.
I don't know, man.
Well, why do you say baloney? I mean...
Because there isn't it possible that you can find consistencies with a variety of things? Maybe not. However, if the men only started to lose their hair when they were 30 or 40, there was no difference in their risk of developing prostate cancer.
When did you start losing your hair?
I think I started losing my hair when I was 28. And I'll tell you why I knew that. My girlfriend at the time, I was just talking to her, and she said something to me, and I said, oh, yeah, like what? And she, I don't know what she was talking about, your hair. And I go, what do you mean my hair? And she pointed to the top of my head. She pointed to the top of her head, meaning the top of your head. I go, what are you talking about?
Well, how come you didn't know?
Well, think about it, man. When do you look at the top of your head with a mirror?
I wouldn't to look and see if I'm bald.
What do you mean you would to look and see if you're bald? Do you?
No.
Well, then, how do you know?
If I was going bald, I would.
Yeah, but how would you know you're going bald?
Somebody tell me.
Well, that's what I did. Somebody told me, and I started looking. So my girlfriend says to me right there, and so I go, really? So I went into the bathroom, took the mirror, looked, and God, I mean, to see your hair for the first time, to see that you have actually lost hair like that, where you can see your scalp, it's pretty, like, whoa. Scary, you know.
Were you really bald?
Not really, man, but you could see through scalp. And so that's when I went, oh, man, you know. So I was about 28 years old.
Well, what did you try and get hair plugs or something?
I thought about it, and I went through, and I've mentioned this on the air. I went through a six-month period of real ridiculousness, what I call the real jackball period when guys lose their hair. That's when you want to get hair plugs. That's when you think about getting, they have a thing called scalp reduction, man, where you, I don't know, you they make an incision and pull your scalp together, a bunch of stuff like that.
Ew.
And, geez, bud.
Yeah, what's that about?
That's ew.
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 Anyway.
What, you think I sound gay?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah, as a matter of fact. So, you know, all kinds of stuff. And then and ridiculous things like shampoos that you see. Do you remember the Dick Van Dyke episode where he dreamed of going bald and he used some sort of an oil and vinegar concoction? He had a dream that he was growing, he was growing cabbage on his head, lettuce. Well, anyway, stupid things like that. I went through a six-month period of that kind of idiocy, where I was ordering these different things, doing scalp massage, and then I also called a place about hair plugs. And then, at the end of, I'd say 6 to 8 months, I just went, you know, I don't care.
You just didn't care anymore.
I don't care. I didn't give a damn. You know?
You didn't say that you get more women when you was bald?
Well, I don't know if it's because I was bald. It just happened to coincide with the time in my life when I started losing my hair. And I suddenly had all these girlfriends, you know. And Women, it just, it doesn't hang them up. It really just doesn't. Some chicks, I don't know, you know. But I bet there's something that hangs up everybody about everyone. So what are you going to do? But I never found it to be anything that was, I didn't like the way it looked. But what the hell are you going to do, you know?
You know, why don't you just shave your head, man? You wear your hair kind of long.
I've shaved my head. I've worn it short. I've worn it long. One thing I refuse to do is do the ponytail. The bald guy with the ponytail? No way. Uh-uh.
Yeah, that's the most jackball thing that I'd ever seen.
I saw a guy on TV the other night, and this guy's some lawyer, and he's some famous lawyer, and he's got this braided ass, just this ass tail is what I call it. A braided little thin gray ponytail coming off of his bald ass head. And you just want to walk up to the guy and say, excuse me for just a moment, and take some shears and just cut it off and show it to him. See? See what I did? See your little braided thing?
Yeah, he'd probably sue you for damages.
Sue me for damages? Because I damaged his ponytail? It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, so that's why I think Iran should be invaded. All right.
Hey.
World famous Phil Hendry Show here tonight. And don't forget PhilHendryShow.com, the news hour here with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, tell him about that story.
I forgot to tell that story. Yeah, this morning I got up very, very early for a gig that I had, a voiceover gig, and then I took Maria to the airport. Now, she is a member of our local Rotary, and I don't know a lot about Rotary. Honest to God, I don't. I've heard of it. Rotary International, Rotary Club. You guys, you've heard of the Rotary Club, right? You've heard of Kiwanis, that kind of thing? And I don't know anything about it. She's a big believer in it, and her father was in Rotary, and I think her brothers are. It's a organization of business people who are service-oriented. That's their thing. You know, they want to be service-oriented. So she needed to go to the airport this morning. So I'll give you a ride because I'm going to be up. And I took her, and she flew this afternoon, I think at 1 o'clock, to Tokyo and then on to... she's staying in Tokyo, I think, for a couple days, and then they're going on to New Delhi. And as part of a contingent of American Rotary Club members, they're going to sort of be in India as a support and sort of as a cheerleading for the members of Rotary in India who are attempting to inoculate all the children in India against polio. So it's a very laudable thing, and especially for the Rotary members in India and the American Rotary guys that are going over there to... cheer them on and get this done. They literally are going to be, I mean, I asked her, I said, well, so where are you? They're going to be like in the sticks, man.
They're going to be like in that movie Gandhi.
Yeah, like in that movie Gandhi. Seriously, man, they're going to be way out in the middle. And although she's going to be staying in the homes of, they call Rotarians, people who are in the Rotary Club. She's going to be staying in the homes of Rotary members in India. But then they go out during the day and literally knock on doors, man. Now, they're only going to inoculate children 5 years of age and under, right?
Yeah.
Do you know how they figure out how old a kid, whether a kid's five or not?
Uh-uh.
You ask the child to touch the ear on the other side of his head. Okay, so lift up your right arm. You don't have to do it, bud. I think you're five, right?
Yeah.
What are you? You too?
You did the same thing.
Well, yeah, but I'm just demonstrating it. Well, anyway, okay. I guess it's natural, isn't it?
Yeah. See, I can do it.
Well, good. Okay, I guess you're 5 years old, man. Wow, you know.
Well, I mean, when you say it, everybody's going to automatically do it.
Yeah, everybody in the audience right now, I know, is touching their ear with their arm. I know. So, but if a little kid can do that, they're five. So then they, seriously, because here's the thing. Some of the parents are so poor, and this is very backwoods and very rural. They don't even know the ages exactly of their children. So anyway, I took her to the airport, and... I'm coming out, and I get over to the lot at LAX. We're at the Bradley Terminal, which is the International Terminal. I go across to where my car I thought was parked. It's not there.
Yeah, you thought it was stolen.
Hold on. I could have sworn I parked it at this one spot. You know how you just, I know I was on level three, and I know that I had to nose the car into this cement pillar, and there was a car here and a car here, and I just knew it. And I looked. I said, where is my car? I don't know where my car is. I walked this level, and I almost burst into tears because I was sure my car had been stolen. And I also realized that in my car was my cell phone. That was a double whammy because on my cell phone is all kinds of stuff, man, that anybody that wanted to, I mean, hack me serious, all you need is my cell phone. So I walk back into the terminal, dragging myself. I got to report my car is stolen. And I walk over to these two LA cops, and one looks like LAPD. The other guy's wearing this jumper. I don't know. It looks like an anti-terror cop thing, something. And I said, I think my car's been stolen. So I meet this guy named Jose Vermonte. He is a Los Angeles airport police officer. He said, Mr. Hendry, I've never seen a car that people have reported stolen here in this lot ever actually be stolen. I've always found it. You wait here. And I said, you're lying to me. He said, no, you watch, Mr. Hendry. And I'm telling you, an hour later, in came Jose Vermonte of the Los Angeles Airport Police Department, and he said, it's on the fourth level, second car over, you dumbass. No, he didn't say dumbass.
Yeah, he did.
No, he didn't. And I said, man, thank you. Thank you. Anyway, I said that I would give him a mention, not a shout-out. Not a shout-out, a mention, a great mention to Officer Jose Vermonte, Los Angeles Airport Police. Our show is produced by Jason Rance. Our technical director is Rick Johnson. And, of course, our associate producer is Dan Northcraft. And this is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And don't forget to visit our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Back at it tonight, man.
Phil Hendry.